The caption of this cartoon says, a father speaking to his teenage daughter, a body goes through changes during the teen years. When you started dating, my hair turned gray. When you started driving, I got heart palpitations. It's true that when a person enters the teen years, they go through a lot of changes. They have to make a lot of adaptations. But so do parents. Because it's sometimes equally as challenging in their role, and they have to learn to adapt. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. It's so good to be with you again tonight, and it's wonderful to see everyone here. The theme of the singing, the wisdom of God, and our need to seek it and accept it, it's such a fitting one for us anytime, because I know you're here tonight because you know that you're not adequate. That your own knowledge and wisdom is not enough, that you need the wisdom of God, and that you're here seeking that, and we want to commend you for that, especially if you're visiting with us. We very much welcome you, and we're very grateful for your attendance. But this is such a good thing for us in light of what we're studying this week, because parenting is such a challenging task, and it's wonderful, and I want the parents to think about this. How that there are so many here in attendance this week who have already raised their kids or who don't have kids, but they're here. And you need to take that as a sign that all of these people are interested in seeing faithful children in a faithless world. And that they support you and they're behind you. And I want to encourage all of you to do that. That maybe these lessons will help to make your awareness of the great job of being a parent, just that much more heightened, and that in the days and weeks ahead that you give these parents here encouragement and you support them, you know, that you see them having a difficult time, maybe a pat on the back or an encouraging word, or if they're pursuing a child, if you need to stick your foot out and help them that way, whatever you need to do to assist them in the job of raising their children as they need to raise them. And it's great to make a congregational effort on this subject. Well, all transitions are challenging. And a teenager goes through physical, mental, emotional, but also spiritual and moral transitions. And we parents need to make sure that we're doing all that we can to help them with those changes. And so tonight we're going to talk about, in this series, Raising Faithful Children in a Faithless World, guiding them to independence. How to parent our teens and young adults. Most of what we have to say tonight is about the teen years, but we'll have some connection to helping those who are our children who are in their young adult years. But also I want to say some things along the way to the teenagers and even those who are about to become teenagers and those who are young adults. And so watch and listen for that also. I want to start with a list. And that is a list of myths about teenagers. I heard it said one time that, you know, how do you raise a teenager? You take them and you put them in a barrel and you seal the lid. And then at 16, you plug up the one hole in the side. And that reflects sometimes a frustration that people have with teenagers, a feeling of inadequacy. And that's understandable. But I think sometimes that's overblown. It's hard sometimes, but it's not impossible to raise a teenager. And there are examples here, even in this congregation, of teenagers that are a great reflection of the will of the Lord and faithfulness. And I want you to consider this list. First of all, that teenagers are impossible to understand. That's a myth. Teenagers, remember this, teenagers are people. They're people just like other people. They're at a different stage in their life. But just the same way you understand anyone who maybe is older or younger or from a different culture or background, if you make the effort, you can understand some important things about them. That teenagers are impossible to handle. That there is just no way that you can, you know, lead or guide or direct them. And that's just a myth. Certainly there are some teenagers that are more difficult than others. And the idea also that teenagers are going to sow their wild oats. That there's just some misbehavior they've got to get out of their system. That's almost Calvinistic. And that's just a myth. Also, that I'm the last one as a parent that teenagers will listen to. Hopefully we'll see tonight, and you'll be impressed upon by the book of Proverbs, that that should not be the case. It doesn't have to be the case. And actually, if you really deeply feel that way, that on a regular basis, you're the last one they listen to, then you've got to really do a reevaluation of your relationship with your teenager, because it shouldn't be the case. And then there's the idea that sometimes a parent will say, well, my kid would never do that. We've emphasized in several lessons about the reality of being a parent, and we have to have our eyes open when it comes to our children. We have to be, to the best of our ability, objective when it comes to our children. And we have to realize that our children do face temptations, they do face difficulties, and any teenager is vulnerable to any kind of shortcoming or failure. And it's an awareness of that helps us to lead them in the right direction. So hopefully we can dispel those myths and now go to the book of Proverbs. Oh, and also the teenagers, in a general way, are all like that. Teenagers are always on their cell phones. Teenagers are always disrespectful. Teenagers are always this way or that way. That's never productive about any group, is it? And so laying those things aside, go with me to Proverbs, the first chapter tonight. And let's first of all consider where we will spend our time here in the book of the Proverbs about who is doing the writing and to whom he is writing. Because it's very helpful for us to establish that first, understand the impact of what is being said in these wise sayings. In the Proverbs, we read beginning in chapter 1, in verses 1 to 4. Note who is writing and to whom he's writing. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. We skip down to verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Now, yes, the writer is identified as Solomon, but I want you to consider the role of Solomon here in the Proverbs. He's a father writing to his son. And the reason why he's writing to his son is so that the son will gain wisdom. Now, a good question is this. At what stage of growth is this son? Is it a child? Is it a teenager? Is it a young adult? Well, first of all, the fact that he's able to write in this fashion says something about the maturity of the one receiving these wise sayings. And though this is the initial intent of these writings, they were used more broadly, and we even have them today, all these many, many centuries later. But look at the original intent. It's a father writing to his son. And what do we have here? Well, in chapter 1, verse 11, he writes about violent thieves. In chapter 2, verse 16 to 18, as we'll read later, he writes about sexual immorality and the woman that will tempt you in that way. In chapter 22 and in verse 6, he talks about raising children. All of those passages we read last night about disciplining our children from the book of Proverbs, they were originally intended to be received by a son from his father. So think about all that. This son has to be at the age, or nearing the age, or really at the age, where he could fall into a band of roaming thieves, that he could be tempted sexually, and that he is about to, or just beginning to, raise his own children. That's all this instruction about how to discipline them. And so he's got to be either an adult son, or a newly adult son, or a swiftly approaching adulthood son. So what do we have here? We have a wise and experienced father who is giving instructions to his son about living an adult life and making some very grown-up, very serious decisions. Do kids hit a magic age and they're all grown up and independent? We all know that's not the case, that it's a gradual process. And there's really even a debate about the teenage years. We have this well-defined description, because when we say teenager, we all understand not only the age description there, 13 to 19, but we also understand something about the personality and the place in life and the different issues that that person faces. Some people have wondered, is teenagehood sort of a modern industrial age creation? That used to, there was hardly this period of, you know, extended progress from childhood into adulthood. That's a good question. It's hard to know. And whether or not culture has well defined a long period of maturing from childhood to adulthood, we understand that in any age, this doesn't happen overnight. That there is a transitional phase. It may be in some cultures that the transition occurs quicker than others. However, it does take a while to mature. And these proverbs are aimed directly at somebody who's entering adulthood or just entered adulthood, and thus they have great relevancy to those who are in that transition phase. And the proverbs say more. And I want you to look at God's plan here. Look how God intended to help someone in that transition. Turn with me to chapter 3. In chapter 3, verse 1, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments." Keep reading with me in the next chapter. Chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. "Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive, that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching." Continue to the next chapter, chapter 5, verse 1. "My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge." And then in the sixth chapter, in verse 20, "My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always, tie them around your neck. When you walk, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you awake, they will talk with you." Do you see the plan here? God's plan is for, as a child reaches maturity and enters adulthood, that they begin to make their own independent decisions, but when they make those decisions, they are carrying with them the instruction, the teaching, the wisdom that had been imparted to them by their mother and their father, and that they actually carry them with them as if they're around their neck or in their hands, that they're at their disposal at any time. And it's as if this wisdom is watching over them so that they know how to make the right decisions in life. And it's not just the instructions they previously received. These sayings are currently being written to this person in transition or just coming out of transition into adulthood. And so what we have here is God's plan. That as a person transitions into adulthood, and even as they're living in their adulthood, they draw upon the past instruction of their parents, and they still lean on, to some extent, the wisdom of their mother and their father. Now, how do we fail in this plan sometimes? This is the way God wants it to be. Well, sometimes we fail because parents just dump their kids into the adult world abruptly. Like, well, they're out of high school now. They're on their own. Well, they can figure that out for themselves. Or they get through with college. Or they get married. That they hit some magic event in their life, and all of a sudden the parent just sort of backs off, and the child backs off, and the adult is just dumped into life on their own. The other way we fell in this plan, and we saw some of this Sunday afternoon, is that parents refuse to allow children to gain their independence and make their own choices, that they smother their children, that they hover over their children, that they pad everything for their children, that they have to be involved in every little detail of their child's life. That's not what this is talking about. This young person is making their own decisions, living their own life, but they're doing it with the guidance of their parents' wisdom, both in the past as well as in the present. Another way that we fail in this is that young people resent any more parental involvement in counseling. And young people resist any kind of advice from their parents, any kind of questions, any kind of concern, and they push their parents away. Well, the Proverbs is telling us that's not God's plan. You need to keep listening to your parents. And I want to say some things specifically to parents and young people here. In light of these passages and God's pattern here and God's plan, understand that your child needs to move from little decisions to big decisions. You need to be involved in helping them make some little decisions, and then after a while, just let them make those little decisions. And maybe they'll come to you and discuss about the outcome of those decisions, but you're letting them make them. And then they're moving into bigger decisions, and so you counsel them. You have a conversation with them about it. You ask them some questions about it. Hopefully the child will do the same. And you're there as they make those decisions. But you've got to move them from the little decisions to the big decisions where they gain more and more independence to be able to make those. Because the goal is to train them to make wise decisions. A parent, even into the years where the child is a young adult, a parent is not to be some kind of automatic vending machine where you just hit the parent button and they give you what you need to do. Almost like a fortune cookie thing. You crack it open and there in that little strip of paper, it tells you what to do from the parent. No. Our goal as parents is to help them develop wisdom. What's the thing that he starts off on in Proverbs 1? There are all kinds of specific things about you should do this and you should do that. You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. This is a foolish act, this is a wise act. You have all kinds of details in the Proverbs. But over and over and over, as we saw in those readings, especially the first chapter, the thing you're trying to instill in your child is the ability to be wise, to discern, to understand, to have good judgment. We can help them with specifics. It's more important, though, that our goal is to train them to make good decisions, no matter what those decisions are, so that we, when we're not around, they can make good choices. And the standard is for them to embrace God's wisdom and God's righteousness. And so what that tells us is, as parents, when our child gets into teenage years and they're pushing deeper into the teenage years and they're entering into the young adult years, we have to transition our role and see ourselves as chief counselor. We talked last night from the Proverbs and other passages about the necessity for parents of children to be very much involved, very much hands-on, training, teaching, and discipline. But as parents, we have to transition out of that role as our children move into adulthood. And we have to become, in light of the Proverbs, it's the model we see, the chief counselor for our child. It's important that we see ourselves that way and they see ourselves that way. And as parents, we should expect a continual involvement in our child's life, but it's this kind of involvement as this wise counselor. Not controller, not in the saddle with the reins in our hands and them hanging on to our back, but rather they're in the driver's seat and we're giving them advice and counsel. And I want to say this to teenagers and young adults. Realize that heeding your parents' advice is not a surrendering of your independence. When you listen to your parents and you heed their counsel, you are not showing a sign of weakness and immaturity. If you listen to your parents' counsel and heed their advice and wisdom, it's actually a sign that you're wise. And what you're doing is that you're showing respect for God's way and model for how this is to happen, as we read about it here in the book of Proverbs. Please, teenagers and young adults, develop this pattern with your parents. Tell them what's going on in your life. I mean, maybe when you were 10 years old and you sat at the dinner table and your parents said, "Well, how was your day?" And you go, He says, "Well, what's going on? What's happening with you and your friends?" You got to grow out of that. If you're going to become a more mature person, you need to talk to your parents. You need to tell them what's happening. You need to share that with them. You need to have conversation and you need to listen. You need to do both. You need to tell them what's happening with you because they need to know that. You need to tell them how you're feeling about things and your outlook on things. You need to tell them about your questions and dilemmas and challenges, and then you need to listen to what they have to say back. And the earlier you are in adulthood, the more you need to do this. But understand, it should never end. I'm 50 years old. I know you're shocked. I know I don't look a day over 30. But I still do this all the time with my father. Matter of fact, it's hard for me to think about the day that I can't pick up the phone or sit down with my father and talk to him about something that's on my mind. I know that day's coming. But I dread it. And so you need to be able to see that for the rest of your life, as long as your parents are living, that you have a gift to be able to sit down and listen to them and share with them. And listen, it's a sign of maturity to do that, not a sign of immaturity. It's the immature teenager, it's the immature 25-year-old or 35-year-old who says, "I don't need to talk to my parents about that. I don't need to listen to what they have to say." That is foolishness and immaturity. Because, you know, when you refuse to listen to what your parents have to say, and this is so period, but if your parents are Christians, this is so much the case. If you're not considering their advice and their counsel, you're actually rebelling against the plan of God. That's the way He set this up, and the Proverbs prove that. And there will be consequences if you rebel against it. And to those of you who are budding teens, what I'm talking about, those of you who are 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, remember that when you start feeling independent, remember that parents still know more about more than you do. You're smart. You're learning a lot. But your parents still know more about more things than you do. And they will for a long time. You need to listen to what they have to say. You need to ask them their advice. And soon enough, you're going to be making all your own decisions. But you need to listen to your parents. That's part of becoming a mature person. And plan always to have a good line of communication. Always talk to your parents. Tell them how you feel. Tell them what you think. Tell them what's on your mind. And as you see yourself becoming 14 and 16 and 18 and one day going to college and one day getting married and even having your own kids, remember something. Your parents are always there and always have a plan to talk to them and listen to them. That's God's plan. So what can we draw? There's the point. What can we draw from the Proverbs about those who actually have the task of aiding their teenagers and young adults into maturity? Well, consider with me again going back to Proverbs chapter 1, how that this is a really serious conversation that of a parent in their adolescent or their young adult regarding life's decisions. First of all, parents, you need to address them in adult-like fashion. Look how Solomon words it here in Proverbs chapter 1. He starts off in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing. And he goes on in this. He says in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. There is no more profound statement in all the Proverbs, and it's one of the most profound statements in all the Bible, than that found at the beginning of verse 7 there in chapter 1. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We live in an age and in a civilization that thinks it's the most enlightened civilization ever to exist on earth. But ignorance of God is rampant. And the truth is, we live in a society that is extremely ignorant of true knowledge. Because real knowledge begins with God. He is the source of truth and wisdom, knowledge and understanding. He's the beginning of it. You see, that's hefty. And parents, you need to address your teenagers and young adults in an adult-like fashion. You know, when it comes to baseball, there is what is called a sweet spot on the bat, where if you hit at the top of the bat, it's a grounder. Underneath, lower part of the bat, it's a pop-up. But the sweet spot is where you can just drive that ball hard and long and straight. And this takes a dexterity as a parent. As they're moving from 10 to 12 to 14 to 16, you got to adjust your conversation style with your kid. You've got to hit the sweet spot. You've got to talk to them as adult as possible, as much as they can handle it. You can't get over their heads. But sometimes a kid will say, "You talk to me like a five-year-old." Well, sometimes a kid will say that because they're resisting some kind of instruction. But sometimes the kid has a point. So with a teenager and a young adult, as much as possible, that's how you need to address them. They long to be viewed as an adult. And when you treat them that way, and sometimes you can do it over an innocuous conversation. It may not be about, you know, their choice of friends or activities. It may be just about something that's a neutral subject. Or maybe even something going on in your life. And you have an adult conversation with them. What you're doing is you're building a foundation than to have an adult conversation with them about something that really has an impact on their life. If you can establish that kind of communication. You know, within reason, you need to treat them that way because you're helping to train them to be an adult by having those kinds of conversations with them. Go with me to chapter 1 again, verse 8 and 9, where he says, "Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your neck and pendants for your neck." You've got to continue to teach and train because it's as needed as ever. Do you see the picture here? The Solomon is sending his son off into the world, and he like drapes around his neck the wisdom and advice and counsel of mother and father and says, "Go, but take this with you." You see, even though they enter adulthood, they still need your counsel. Teenagers tend to have this trait. They act like they know more than they really do. You know, the old expression, fake it till you make it. And I think sometimes as a teenager, we want, you know, a teenager, you want to be a mature and you want to be an adult, and so you sometimes act like it, whether you're mature on the inside or not. And there's a tendency for us adults sometimes to look at a teenager who's acting very mature and think that they are. It's like you take a teenager that's starting to drive, and the first time you see them in a car by themselves, you're like, whoa, takes you back. It's almost like, wow, that's just a big jump for them. And like just automatically with this car surrounding them, you think they're mature. Well, guess what? The day before they got their license, they're not that much different. The day they turn 16 or whatever it is you have to turn here in Alabama, they're not that much different that day than they were the day before. They're sitting in a car by themselves and it's moving. That's the difference. They're still the same kid. I remember a few years ago, I would go to the high school football games where I taught, and I'd sit in the stands. And some of the people in the stands were parents, but a lot of people in the stands were not parents. They didn't know the kids that well. And these boys would run out in the field, and they'd have these helmets on, big shoulder pads, and they'd run on the field, and they'd make mistakes. And I'd hear the fans yell things, and I'm like, okay, I've got that kid in my class. He's just 16. He's the guy that turned red the other day when that girl said something to him. Funny. And you're expecting him to go out there in that field and be a gladiator. He's 16. He's sensitive. He's brittle. He's still very young. Sometimes we look at teenagers and we think they've got it all wrapped up and summed up and they're completely mature because they're in some more mature-looking setting or circumstance. Well, they are becoming more mature. They are budding into adulthood. But they still need us. They need different things from us. But what they need is still acute. Remember we talked about a fish going belly up last night. Unfortunately, a lot of parents go belly up at this point when their kid becomes 14, 15, 16. They're trying to parent them as if they're 10, 11, and 12, and you can't do that. And they're not transitioning with the kid. And the parent gets frustrated and eventually just pulls back and goes belly up and gives up the job. Can't do that. You got to transition. You got to adapt. You got to see yourself as going from being a guider and a leader to being a counselor and an advisor. Step by step, but you got to make that transition. But though your job is changing, you still have a job. Never surrender that. And also, look at the appeal to wise living that he makes in chapter 3 and in verse 13. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. Here's the two main things that the Proverbs tell us. One is, wisdom comes from God. And if you can seek that wisdom that comes from God, you will be blessed in a multitude of ways. Those are the same themes over and over and over in the book of Proverbs. Wisdom comes from God, and if you seek it and get that wisdom, you are so blessed and benefited. Training is the concept we've emphasized this week. And what you're trying to do, especially now, is train your teenager or young adult to be wise. That wisdom comes from God, but you're trying to train them to attain that wisdom. I mean, what is training? One good working definition is that you teach, you correct, and you guide so somebody can do it on their own. The whole point of training someone to drive a tractor, or training someone to write code, or training someone to build a rocket, is so they can do it. Now, what do we call it when we help our children learn to go to the bathroom? We call it potty training. And our goal in that is that for them to do that from now on out, and we don't have to. Right? Think about that concept. Potty training. So they can do it, and we don't have to. And that should apply to the whole thing. We're trying to teach, correct, and guide so they can do things on their own, and we do not do it for them. And so ask yourself the question as a parent, are you teaching independence And it's somewhat of a paradox that the child is independent, but they still come back for us for our advice. But that's the proverbial way. Are you teaching independence or are you fostering dependence? Because you see, if you foster dependence, they will not become wiser. They will not learn judgment. And you can't always be there when they need advice. But if you train them to be wise, they'll have what they need. You need to explain cause and effect with your children. When they become teenagers and young adults, they have the ability to understand the abstract. They have the ability to see the long range better than when they were 8 and 9. You need to explain cause and effect. You need to paint the end picture that if you do this, this is where that leads. That yes, if you make this choice, it may not happen the next day, but eventually it takes you down a road that leads to this destination. You need to point out real-world examples, examples in the family, example among their friends, examples in the media and in the culture around us, and discuss those things and say, why did it turn out that way? Why was that a bad choice? Why was that a good choice? How did they get to the point where they accomplished that? How did they get to the point where they made a train wreck out of that? And talk to them about the steps and the choices that lead to certain outcomes and train them to have wisdom. And the goal is a relationship with God. In chapter 3, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. But look here, it's not wisdom in a vacuum. Verse 3, let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart so you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. He will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of His reproof. For the Lord reproves him whom He loves as a father the son in whom He delights. Isn't that beautiful the way the writer puts this here? He is telling his son to seek wisdom and find the Lord and lean on God and trust God. And what he's doing here is he's telling this son to go to God to be your father. In a way, it's counter to what we want, maybe, but it shouldn't be. If our priorities are right and we know God, this should be the main thing that we want, that we move our child to seeing God as their true father. Now, that's wise living. That's the goal. Make it about God. Don't make it about you. I know a man who is having major problems with his daughter. She was in and out of trouble. He tried this, he tried that. And I remember him sharing the story that at one point that he was riding with her in the car and he just pulled his car off the road and he just sat there and wept. And he actually told me that he felt like he didn't have anything else he could do, and he thought that if he cried in front of her, that it would affect her. Well, I can understand that frustration. But it's not about us, is it? It's really not about whether they've embarrassed us or troubled us or broken our hearts. It's about their relationship with God. There are some children who please their parents, but that can be displeasing to God. We need to train our children that wise living is all about God. It's about stepping closer to Him and being His person. and never, never make an appeal to your child. Well, we just don't do that because we belong to the Jordan Park Church of Christ. We just don't follow that kind of behavior because we go to church down there. It's not about what the church says or does. The church should be teaching and practicing what the Word of God says. But the church is not the standard. The church has the charge to declare the standard, and that's the Word of God. But our eyes should be on God. That's who we please. That's who we honor. Because He's our true Father. In a way, you need to see yourself as a foster parent, leading your child along a wise path to our real Father, God. And let's get real specific here. Go back with me to chapter 1 about the company they keep. It's interesting how that the very first specific warning is about company, about peers. In chapter 1, verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason." The very first thing that specifically Solomon details about a problem and about a danger are others who are your peers that can pull you into doing evil things. Look with me in the second chapter. He continues the idea in chapter 2 and in verse 10, where he talks about the outcome. "For wisdom will come into your heart, knowledge will be pleasant to your soul, discretion will watch over you, understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and whose are devious in their ways. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words." The teaching is this: if you pursue and find the wisdom of God, it will deliver you from evil, perverted men and from people who will entice you to do wicked things that will destroy you. Parents, watch carefully the company your children keep when they're teenagers, period, but when they're teenagers and young adults. If there is an area where you must still be diligent in your watchfulness and guidance and guardianship, it's the company they keep. Is it that a teen chooses the wrong crowd, or that a teen is pulled in to do wrong by a crowd? I suppose either can happen. Both do. That the scenarios here in the Proverbs is that there is this evil crowd and they pull you in and thus pull you down to that wickedness. Why is it that this is so important as a parent? It's the nature of being a teenager or even a young adult. They are very socially sensitive and orientated. Just watch them come into the auditorium sometime. Just wait a few weeks so the series is over, but do a little sociology experiment. And so there might be some teenagers that sit together, and so one of them comes in, and they see their friends, and they sit right down. But there might be another service where they walk in, and their friends aren't there yet, and there's a strange kid there, and they walk in, and they just keep going right back. "I'm going to Mom and Dad tonight. I'm sitting with them." There's just this sensitivity socially that teenagers have. We were all that way. Why is that? Because self-image issues begin to be heightened as you enter adulthood. What do people think about me? What do people say about me? You know, a child sometimes, they just don't have an awareness of that. They do these things that to us, does a child ever do something or say something in front of you and you laugh and they look at you like, what's he laughing about? They're just unaware of that. how they look and how they behave and what they say and how interesting and goofy and funny it can be. But a teenager becomes very aware of that. And that sensitivity, Satan uses that against them. They want to be accepted by their peers. They want to be praised by their peers. They want to find a group and belong to it. I remember one day I was talking with some other teachers about groups in a high school. And I'm a little bit outdated on this, but we were talking about the skater group, the skater boys. And we were talking about the goths. And we were talking about the athletes. And we were talking about... I'm trying to find the right words here. Anyway, different groups. And they were talking about this one kid that when he came in his ninth grade, he was a skater boy. Then by the time he was a 10th grader, he was a goth. And then by the time he was an 11th grader, and he just went through all the groups. And his clothes changed and his hair changed. It was the same kid, but he kept finding another group to identify with. And that's the way teenagers are. They're looking for that group. You've got to help them with that. And do the best you can to redirect them when they're making bad choices. How do you do that? You need to know their friends. You need to allow your home to be a place where they and their friends come so you can have a window into that. You need to volunteer. I'll drive y'all there. Oh, you need to go somewhere? I'll take you guys. Now, that might mean that you have to give up something you want to do. But you need that window into their friends. You need to be aware. Let me say a word about college. When I was a teenager, most Christians who got into sinful behaviors, things like alcohol and sexual morality and so forth, it was usually the teenage years, the high school years, where this was a big issue, and that's where kids made those choices. I think things are different now with most kids. That's still a problem. But most kids today, those in the church and those outside the church, they face their most serious temptations in college, not high school. Now that's just my 2 cents worth. You can try it out. So that's a serious decision. That's your personal decision. But don't think that, well, they're 18 now, they've graduated, we'll just go somewhere, drop them off, unload the luggage and the trunks, and say bye, see you later. Can't work that way. That's a serious decision. They need to be somewhere where they can have spiritual support. Why a good church like this, where there's a college right here, it's a great atmosphere for a young person. And I tell you, listen to me, brothers and sisters. Listen to me. Don't be shy. Don't hold back. You've got souls at stake here. When a college kid comes into this church and visits, you inundate them with attention. You talk to them. You introduce yourself. If it kills you to walk up and introduce yourself to somebody, you get over that if there's a college kid that comes through that door, because they need to know that there's some other brother or sister, an older brother and sister, that can know them and watch them and be with them when they're at this crucial stage. But they need spiritual support. Don't just dump your kid somewhere at a college spot. Talk about this with them. And together, choose a place where they can have good spiritual support. And when you have the opportunity to provide that spiritual support, then by all means do so. And as a parent, provide spiritually positive social environments. Look at the great statement made that applies to all of us, but is so crucial to teens and young adults. And that's Proverbs 27, verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. The home is the primary spiritual training place. But when they become teenagers and young adults, they need peers that can be positive influences on them, spiritual iron sharpening them. Get them involved at church. get them connected to church. When you hear some unique activity or event that can help your teenager in being a Christian, get them there. Spend the money. It's amazing how much money parents spend and how much time they spend and how many miles they put on a car. Getting them to sporting events and music events and other kinds of academic events. But if there is something where they can interact with other Christians and be helped spiritually, break your neck to facilitate that. As iron sharpens iron, get them around other Christians who believe in Christ so they can benefit from that. They need it. And then along the way, you need to speak like the Proverbs speak to your children who are teenagers and young adults. In chapter 5, look at the straight talk. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. And then, in chapter 6, verse 6, look at the straight talk. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. You need to talk to your children straight when they become teenagers. There are some things we have to describe delicately when they're 8 and 9 and 10. But when they're 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 and on, you need to talk straight to them and plain and frankly. That's the way the Proverbs are written. And they're even more frank. There is even more frank language than what we read. You know, there are instructions about what to do in a burning building that you can read on a card or sit in a little seminar and hear them talk about it. But then there are instructions when you're actually in a burning building that somebody is shouting out to you. There's a difference, right? Listen, they're in real danger when they're a teen and they're a young adult. It's not time to mince words. Tell it like it is. The greatness and goodness of God and the great blessing of following Him and the extreme danger and bitter pain that comes when you ignore God and go against His wisdom. They need to know the way it really is. Children live in a cocoon. Teenagers live in the real world. I think this is a great definition of a teenager. A soul on a bubble. There are no guarantees in the things that we're looking at this week. No guarantees about outcome. Because people have their own choice. But we are called to parent the ways that the Bible calls us to parent. And to do the best we can to give our kids the best chance they can have. Because by the time they become a teenager, they are a soul on the bubble. They could go one way or the other. And it's time to become as sharp and focused and determined as ever to do what we can to raise them to be faithful. Things change, and you have to adjust. And you have to be wise as a parent. But parent, you must do. Our brother selected an invitation song to encourage any soul to become a child of God by responding to the call of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And even this night, if you'll confess your faith in Jesus the Christ, you can be baptized into Him to walk in newness of life. you're prepared to make the decision, become God's child through Christ, once you make that known by coming to the front as we stand and sing.